welcome to episode 101 of the Geocaching Podcast. I am your host, XPunkX, with
Daryl W4 and
Monty Ryder.
If you want to participate on our show today, please call our show notes, which is 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with our other listeners, and that can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. Click the Join Now to Participate button on the right. We have a voicemail line, and that can be found at 206-350-3GPS. And yes, we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. Well, Montu, Daryl, it's another week, and we're now starting at the 101 shows. Welcome back. Last week was a good show. It was fun to look back on everything that's happened in the past, 100 shows. Montu, how have you been?
Still can't believe we've broken the 100 mark, but not much. I installed half the wiring for the sound system at the train station. Other than that, as everybody can hear from the voice, I'm recovering from my little swim last Tuesday. But doing pretty good. How about you, Daryl?
Well, we went out for a CETO on Belle Isle, which is also the same island that we did the big cache event a couple of weeks ago. Picked up a whole bunch of trash. Of course, we had to go caching after that. Then Sunday, we recorded Cachers the Roundtable 22 with Bass Chaz, and another interview for Cachemaniacs 124. Andy, what have you been up to?
Well, this weekend we went down to Purdue for what they call the Bug Bowl, which is a kind of fun time for the kids. I have a bunch of different pictures on my blog, and I'll link to that in our show notes. It was kind of fun. We got to eat some crickets, chocolate-covered crickets, and some other mealworms and stuff like that. That's kind of gross, but it was fun. Really, that's about it. We did a few caches while we were there. Not too much, just because we were there for the Bug Bowl. So we did 3 caches, and that was a lot of fun. So we're back with another show now, and back to the good old work week. Anyways, Montu, there's some news I hear coming out of Groundspeak here that they're doing some updates today. Can you tell us more about it?
Yep, we did get some more updates from Groundspeak to the geocaching.com site today, Tuesday, April 21st, for those that are listening later. They have discontinued support for Google Earth KML. This is to improve site performance. Now, this was a quote from Groundspeak. This may come as a surprise to some users, so I'd like to offer an explanation. There are a couple reasons for removal of the network KML. The network KML was implemented before we had a proper online mapping tool for geocaching.com. Some of the more tenured cachers may recall the old geo micro maps that would reload the page every time you panned or zoomed, and how tedious that was. However, the subsequent introduction of the full-featured geocaching.com Google Maps has made the KML link somewhat redundant. The other reason is that only 200 users regularly access the Google Earth KML, and the performance hit to the site was grossly out of proportion with the return. So since it was making the site run quite a bit more slowly. Groundspeak hesitates to inconvenience even a small number of geocachers. However, it is sometimes necessary for us to identify areas of performance loss as the site grows in order to keep the site responsive and available at all times, even if it means sacrificing a feature that some found useful. It goes on to say, keep in mind, you can still use the Google Earth to import your GPX files from Pocket Queries. In fact, the accuracy will be much better now since the network KML has always randomized locations to some extent anyways. So they'll continue to explore better ways to map geocaches that serve the needs of the majority of the caching community without jeopardizing the website stability. A couple of updates they did was they added the site logo and URL to print-friendly version of the cache page, added a link to sharing the page from the user profile. They fixed the Google Maps URL on the other conversions and additional waypoints pages, closed the loophole which allowed viewing of a unpublished cache page using the print-friendly view, and change the term archive to delete for clarity on Pocket Query Generator page. Daryl?
Well, next item up is actually an unfortunate one. We had another geocache cause problems at a school on Monday morning, which was the 10th anniversary of the Columbine shootings. This was at the Fairview High School in Boulder, and they evacuated the school just after noon when a teacher, some of the reports have been conflicting on that. Some say it was just before noon. But a teacher spotted a man and a woman bearing some kind of box near the stone sign in front of the school. And that's the quote from the teacher that they gave to the police. That cache appears to be, it's a Knights View cache, and the Knights are the mascot of the school. Waypoint GC1240D. And it was placed more than 2 years ago by Daryl Billington, the school's history teacher. He told the Daily Camera that, quote, "My administration knew. I also got a district grant for it," unquote. And we'll have some links to articles and to that cache in the page, or in the show notes, but it sounds like one of those situations where the cacher should have been a little bit more forthcoming, because they were actually confronted and asked what they were doing, and they were a little bit dismissive and just kind of took off. And then the administration apparently just forgot, because they were consulted about the evacuation and said, yeah, we should do this. But apparently they had forgotten about this cache that they had given approval for just 2 years ago. So out of sight, out of mind, I guess. Now, Andy, I understand that there's been some rumors about changes in the event caches.
Daryl, that's true. This week, someone had asked us a question on our Twitter page, and that's twitter.com/GC podcast. They said that they had heard rumors about changes in the event cache rules, about, and they were saying that the changes were that the event caches were going to have to be 3 hours long as to actually get approval. And that kind of threw some of us off. We're like, you know, I understand where they may want to get rid of the flash mobs, but that also gets rid of meet and greets and other caches or event caches, you know, like even like CETOs and stuff like that. So I decided to call Shauna from Groundspeak, and this is what she came back to me with.
Hi, Andy. It's Shauna Klein from Groundspeak, just returning your phone call. In regards to any event guideline changes, that's definitely a rumor, and if there's one of those fact or fiction little bubbles, it would definitely be fiction. So I don't know where people come up with this stuff. So, I don't know what to say other than it's definitely false.
Thank you, Shauna, for clarifying that rumor for us, that it is just a rumor. So don't be worried about small events and events that are not going to be 3 hours. It is just a rumor. Tonight on the show, we're going to be talking about caching with a mobile phone. And we're not going to be talking necessarily about programs that we can use to like do paperless caching. We're talking about actually like programs and things that we can use to actually go caching with, things that we can, you know, use out in the field to actually do caching with. So Daryl, why don't you kick us off about, you know, what are some things we need to consider about using mobile phones before we actually do that?
Well, it is really convenient to use a mobile phone because it's one device that you're probably going to have with you. So if you're doing the quick little, you know, hey, I'm going to run out at lunch kind of finds, it is great for that kind of stuff. But for the longer ones, you have to make some really important decisions. One is a battery life. If you don't have a long enough battery, you might run into problems where that phone's going to go dead in the middle of caching, and you really don't want to be stuck out there without your phone and your GPS not working. So make sure that you have enough battery life. Some phones will allow external battery packs, which I kind of like that idea because those will actually charge the internal battery. Or you can get a larger battery pack, which you can just swap out. But that means you'd have to shut down the phone and wait for everything to reacquire. As for the durability of the phone, you really want to make sure that it will take the exposure to humidity. Phones are generally not very good at that. So you can get some cases that will take care of that. Dropping your phone, that would be a major nightmare for most of us. So make sure you're going to have some kind of tether or whatever if you really want to do this, in some kind of case that's going to protect the phone. You also have to worry about signal quality. We're going to talk a little bit more about that later on, but if you're using one of these online applications, whether it be the geocache software that talks directly to geocaching.com, the WAP interface, or even Google Maps, which gets its maps off of the data connection, you really got to watch that. And if you lose your signal, you're going to lose everything. So something to really be in touch with is your signal quality. But the biggest problem that most people have been having with their cell phones is that the GPS accuracy is not as good as your traditional handheld GPS. And because it's got such a small antenna, you don't get the same kind of reception that you do out of something like a 60 CSX. So it's great for working around in the cities under, you know, some light tree cover. But when you get into some of the forested areas, you know, you can expect to have some more problems than you would normally. Now, Montu, you want to kind of give us a rundown of a few of the applications out there?
Not a problem. That's another thing everyone has to keep in mind is what applications work with the phone that you have. For Blackberries, you need Cacheberry. Also, Geocaching Navigator works great with the Blackberries. For iPod Touch and the iPhone, there's an application called Caching. There's the Geocaching app, which works with the iPhone. Geocaching Navigator, as I said a moment ago, BlackBerry, it also works with the Nokia Series 60 and a few others. The geocaching.com WAP interface, that one will work with any web-enabled phone. That one's the most generic one. Will work with just about anything as long as it's got a web-enabled link to it. Geosphere works with the iPhone. iGeocacher app is for the iPod Touch and the iPhone. And then, of course, caching with a few other apps like you know, Google Maps, if you can access those, that might work for you as well.
And I've been using the geocaching app version 2 on my iPhone and really kind of fallen in love with it. I use that quite frequently now as my primary unit. When I really want to go caching, I'm still carrying the GPSR. But when I'm running around with the iPhone, I have it in this external battery pack dock kind of thing called a Mophie Juice Pack that really has been very, very great. It's a full day of caching, and I haven't had any problems. And with the geocaching app, I'm constantly using that data connection to pull down the information, including the maps, because the version 2, when you go to its map screen, downloads the maps, and then I usually jump out to the Google Maps that's built into the iPhone itself, because I find that as the better method to actually navigate to the cache. You know, the geocaching app does have some nice maps in there, but having the satellite view of the Google Maps is really just so much easier to look at and to figure out where the cache is, especially with the inaccuracies of the iPhone and its GPS. Now, Andy, we both had a chance to play with Geocache Navigator on the BlackBerry. Did you want to talk about that one?
Sure, I'd love to, Daryl. The Geocache Navigator on the BlackBerry is pretty unique in the fact that it's a lot like the geocaching app in the iPhone store that's supported officially by Groundspeak. The people who make the Geocache Navigator have, you know, paid the fees, so they actually get a live connection to the database. So the reason that I liked it is because you could be anywhere. You didn't need a plan at all, and you could open it up and see the caches that were close to you. You could see, you know, you have the screen to navigate with. It was really good. Again, I didn't like the fact that it, I didn't find it quite as accurate as my GPS, but there was good things because you could, this was pretty much the first thing that you could use the field notes with. You could write on it, you know, right away your log, and it'd be ready for you to, you know, on your field notes when you got back. Now, the thing that I you know, didn't like is what I found myself using it with is a lot of times if I was out in the field and I needed to see more notes than I had on my 76, I could pop that open and I could use those and see the notes that, so I kind of use it more as an offline type of thing, but, you know, for the price, it wasn't bad. I think it was something like, I want to say it was $24 a year with a resubscription fee, you know, every year. Don't quote me on that. I don't know. But we will link to all of these applications in our show notes at www.geocachingpodcast.info. So it was, I would say it was one of the things that I liked because it didn't, you know, for me, if I wanted to go first to find, I could find it even if I didn't have my GPS with me. You know, like Daryl said, it did kill the battery. So that was kind of a bad thing for the phone wise. But, you know, if I'm just doing a first to find or two, it's not bad. Or if I'm traveling, is actually where I found it to be the best. So, no.
And this really does get into the great part about both of these apps. And to the best of my knowledge, these are still the only two apps, the geocaching app for the iPhone and the Geocache Navigator, which, as Montu mentioned earlier, is available for the BlackBerry, the Series 60 Nokia phones. And we should also note that the Series 60 Nokia phones, that's actually a free version that's ad-supported, so you'll get little ads in the cache listings. But it's free. How can you pass that up? You know, if you've got a Series 60 phone, which includes like the N95, you know, go grab that app and just leave it there for those few times that you might want it. And they also do have Geocache Navigator available for a number of other phones from Sprint, Verizon, and many other carriers. So take a look at their list on the website. But those do download direct from the website without having any weird web scraping or, you know, anything that you'd have to really do. You just tie the unit together with the website, and with the geocaching app, you just put in your login credentials on the phone itself. With the Geocache Navigator, you actually have to do that linking through the account page on geocaching.com. But once you do that, it's talking directly with the back-end servers. You're not talking with the web server. So it's really fast compared to loading up those pages. And all you do is hit, you know, caches around me, look for a specific cache if you want to do the GC numbers, do you zip codes, whatever you want. It's just right there. It's quick. It's easy. But the best thing is when you get those first to finds, you just punch that GC number in, you hit go, and that's it. So it is really, really fast. And you're posting your field notes up. When you get back to the computer, you just fill in the rest of the information and you're done.
Now, some of the things that are other benefits of using these services and caching with your phone is the text marks service that you can use to use your geocache or your field notes, and also the Twitter updates that you can link to that too. So you can let your friends, your family, your other people know exactly where you're hitting and what caches that you're hitting. We've discussed those on a previous episode. So go ahead and take a look for that if you'd be interested in using text marks with the Twitter updates. So now, Daryl, going back to you here, let's talk about the built in.
Yeah, now with things like the iPhone, I've heard it's possible with the BlackBerry, and even a lot of the mobile phones have the geocaching or the Google Maps actually built in, and it's really simple with the iPhone, because all you have to do is go to the web page, log in just through the regular Safari browser, go find your caches however you like, and to actually navigate to that cache, all you have to do is hit that Google Maps, not the geocaching Google Maps, but the Google's Maps link, and it will pop you right back into the Google Maps application on your phone, and you're just navigating, which is actually the way that I prefer to do it on my iPhone, right to the cache. You know, you're just that little blinking dot, and you look for the pin, you line the two up, and there's your cache. So it's a really easy way to do it. Not necessarily as nice as doing it through the geocaching app or Geocache Navigator, but it's all free. It's built in. When you're done, you have a choice of going back to the text marks and just SMSing a quick field note in, or go back to the web browser on your phone, either through the geocaching WAP interface, or if you've got a newer phone like the iPhone, you can go to that full webpage and post your log right there. So handy ways to do it without spending any money at all.
Now, let's talk about some of the things that we'd like to see with the mobile device thing here. Montu, why don't you kick us off with something you'd like to see with the mobile device? Looks like we might have lost Montu there. Dale, why don't you tell us what you'd like to see with the Montu with the mobile device?
I'd be happy to tell you what I'd like with the Montu device. no. I really love having the two screens, the one for the GPS, where I can constantly be navigating to it and I don't have to really do much more than, you know, punch it in and watch the arrow. And the other one being the phone / PDA, where I read the cache description, post my field notes, keep track of what I'm doing. But the more that I think about that single device and the more that I'm using the geocaching app on the iPhone, the more I'm really liking the concept of that single device. And I love the iPhone with that external battery pack because I can swap that in and out without having to power down the unit, you know, charge it up in the car. And I'd really like it to be a little bit faster, a little bit better reception, but that always connected thing with just being able to post my field notes, go back to the computer and do the logging at the end of the day and correct any typos from the small screen. But having that constant update of, yeah, it's just really something else to be able to go out in the field when I've loaded the GPS with caches the previous night. I go out there to find that the cache had been archived that morning or disabled. You know, it's not there for whatever reason. That's when I really, really find the benefit of being constantly connected and getting the live cache information. Montu, I think you're back. You want to tell us what you'd like to see?
Yeah, I'd had to mute you guys because I went into a coughing fit. Didn't think we need that on the show.
No, that's never fun. Hope you got a throat lozenge or something in the meantime.
Oh, yeah. Well, for me, if it's going to replace my Rhino, it's got to have position reporting on it because that's one of the big things I use when I'm teaching the kids. If it doesn't have that in it, I can't replace my Rhinos. There's just no way. It's definitely been a very useful tool when I've been teaching, having that position reporting in there so I can see where each of the kids are with their different GPSs. So that would be the one thing I'd have to look for.
Now, for me, I'd have to say the Tupperware detector, like we saw on April Fool's from DeLorme, where you can just pull it out and it tells you exactly where the Tupperware is. It sniffs out the Tupperware. No, all kidding aside, I mean, but yeah, for me, as long as it had the connection, you know, I could always have a connection where I wasn't gonna drop out of my signal, you know, with the phone. It would be, you know, all right for me. Anything like that. So. With that, though, if there's anyone else have any comments that you'd like to put, anything else that you guys use for caching on your mobile, if you've used anything for the Android, the Google phone, give us a call, 206-350-3GPS. Leave a voicemail or give us a call right now at 724-444-7444. And our Talkcast ID is 7525. Anything else you got to put in, go ahead and give us a call.
Well, one thing we should probably note, too, is with the things like the Twitter updates, you might want to be a little careful. You know, it's probably not going to be an issue, but you are essentially telling the web where you are at any given time. So it can be a little bit scary for anything from home invasion to maybe someone who wants to do you ill will personally. So if that's going to be a concern, make sure that you do not enable those Twitter updates. And that's where the field notes also come in handy, because even though you are posting that information live to the geocaching.com web server, it doesn't post it until you get back and actually log those caches. So something to keep in mind.
Now, and one thing too that I'd like to say is another thing with the Twitter thing is, also, people a lot of times will get annoyed if you're doing power caching runs where you're doing more than one or two caches because they don't want to see cache after cache after cache after cache after cache in their Twitter feed. Some people, like Daryl and Bishop, have made their own separate Twitter accounts that are just for posting things like where they're at and stuff so their friends and family can find out where those are at. So just that's another thing to be careful for when you're doing your Twitter updates. We now also have Jeff Bolden on the phone. Welcome to the call.
Hey, guys. This is Jeff Bolden, and I was calling because I am using a couple of products on my HTC Windows Mobile base phone. One of them is called Basic GPS, and the website is basicgps.co.uk. It works very well for a backup. It has a lot of the same issues that the iPhone does. Eats the battery, and it's not as accurate as a handheld GPS, but if you've forgotten your phone or you're wanting to get an FTF and don't want to run home and get your GPS, it works fairly well. It imports both LOC and GPX files and gets all the information in the cache in it if you've imported the GPX. And another thing that I figured out how to do after a lot of research is to use CacheMate and export a KML file so that I can view it on the Google Maps for mobile on my phone. It's a several-step process, so what I would recommend, anybody that's interested in learning about that, either contact me through Twitter or contact me through my GC profile. And my name is Jeff Bolden, J-E-F-F-B-O-U-L-D-I-N. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks for sharing. And if you want to contact Jeff, go ahead and shoot him an email on Twitter or on geocaching.com. Thanks, Jeff, for putting in some input to the show here. If anyone else has any comments, please give us a call, 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. Go ahead and press the *8 on your keypad of the phone or press the request to talk in TalkShoe. Join us each Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. on Eastern on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live to our show at 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. We love to hear from you guys, our listeners. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. You can call our voicemail, and that number is 206-350-3GPS anytime to leave us a voicemail. Have a safe week and keep on caching.